good morning, everybody. I was thinking about all the engagements that are going on, and in case you don't know who I am, my name's Elise. I'm one of the pastors here on staff. I'm also Christian's wife, the youth pastor's wife. He is right. I am a chocolate expert, and the chocolate is very good. But thinking about engagements and stuff and hearing Mark tell the story about when he proposed makes, I don't know if you guys who are married or in relationships, does it make you sentimental when like people start talking or when you've gone to weddings? Like, do you know what I mean? You start thinking about all the stuff that went on your, maybe just me? Okay. But Christian and I emceed a wedding just a couple weeks ago, and then we heard about the engagement, and so it got me kind of sentimental and thinking back. We've been married for 2 years now, so we're pretty much experts. We're going to write a book. And we've been together for how many, four? Is it 4 years? 5 years? 5 years. 5 years, right? Okay, all right, I should know this. We've been together for 5 years. And if we haven't told you the story of how we met and that kind of stuff, it's not a very interesting story. We met at Bible College. Christian came to school first. He came from Ontario, and then he came to the Promised Land, BC, and stayed here forever because it's way, way better. And we met at school and hit it off. We were friends for a while, and then we started dating, and the rest is kind of history, I guess. We're not very exciting. But I was reminiscing a little bit, and it's funny because we had this moment where we were in the car this week with somebody else, and Christian was starting to tell a story. If you know Christian, you know that he likes to tell a lot of stories. And he started by saying this. He's like, oh, Elise, I don't know if you even know this story. And I was like, Christian, I guarantee that I know this story. I guarantee that I know this story. Because he grew up in Ontario, and so he is he has a lot of stories about the family and friends that he had growing up, and he loves telling those stories because, truth be told, they are quite funny. And some of them are, you know, like, he tells a story all the time of how he stood out in the snow for 3 hours, so you probably already know the story, but he uses it to demonstrate his stubbornness. I remember hearing all these stories, and it's kind of a prime example. I'm going to ask you guys if you've ever experienced this, because I found that with Christian in our relationship, I experienced this a lot. Have you ever known a lot, like, have you ever known a lot about somebody before you actually met them? Like, have you guys ever, like, you know, maybe kind of heard a lot of stories or heard a lot of tales about people? Like I said, Christian likes telling a lot of stories. So that happened to me a lot in our relationship. I heard all these stories about people named Phil and Neil and Jace. Well, I knew Phil and Neil and Jace, but like about, you know, Anthony and probably some guy named Josh. I don't even know if there is a Josh. It's probably a Josh. It's Ontario. But like I heard all these stories about all these people. And so I remember hearing all these stories. And Christian would tell me about his parents and about his brother and all these kind of things. And I remember thinking, wow, like there's a lot of stories here. So about 6 months into our relationship, I planned a visit to go to Ontario to actually meet Christian's parents and meet some of these people that I'd heard so many stories about. And I was super, super nervous. I don't know why, but I was super, super nervous. And I started asking Christian all these questions about his parents, about what they were like, about what they like to do, you know, their experiences, their you know, like, oh, like, what are they like? And Christian would say, oh, you know, they're nice. Like, that's not very descriptive, not super helpful, but that's okay. And then I remember I started, I don't know if you know this, Christian, but I remember that I went to my friend Kristen, and I was like, so you've met Christian's parents before, right? Because she was from Ontario. And she's like, yeah. I'm like, so what are they like? And she's like, oh. And she kind of thinks for a minute, and she's kind of like, well, they're jolly. Jolly? She's like, yeah, jolly. I'm like, do you mean like Santa Claus? Like, I don't think anybody likes being described as Santa. What does that even mean? Did they give you a present? I don't understand. But she's like, yeah, they're jolly. They're like Mr. and Mrs. Claus. I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, seriously, does anybody, I still don't know what that means, right? It was kind of like, oh, they're jolly. I'm like, that's not very helpful to me because I don't understand what you mean by jolly. And so anyway, that didn't help. That was just one example of a question gone wrong. But anyway, So I was asking all these questions because if you know me, I like to be prepared. I like to get to know, I like to like have all the information available to me before I actually step into a situation. It takes me a long time to make decisions as it is, but I like to have all the information available to me before I step into any given situation. So I'm asking Christian all these questions, I'm asking all my friends all these questions, but even on the plane, on the way there, as I was kind of getting ready to meet them, I was still super nervous because I was like, oh man, like what if they're nice to everybody but me? What if they're jolly to everybody but me? You know, I'm freaking out right here. But I remember that I walked through the door of their house, and the first thing that they did, the first thing that Christian's parents did was they just went, hello, and they put their arms out wide, gave me a big hug. I didn't even have my stuff down yet. I didn't even have anything. I was still kind of jet-lagged. But they were like, hello, and they gave me a big hug and started talking to me like they had known me forever. And right away, I was like, oh, that's what she means by jolly. That's what she means. Like, they're so nice. And finally, even though I'd heard all these stories and all these, you know, details and about how nice they were and how, you know, jolly or whatever they were, how sweet they were, I didn't really understand it until I experienced it firsthand. I didn't really know what it all meant until I had actually met them in person. And I think that there's this truth about human relationships that that everybody knows, right? And that's that you can know a lot about somebody without actually knowing them. You can know a lot about somebody, but it doesn't mean that you actually know them. There's something different about meeting somebody for the first time. And I think we can read resumes. Like you, if you've ever done any hiring or read anybody's resume, it's the same thing. You're reading this resume, and it could look really good in paper, and then they show up, and you're kind of like, oh, I don't know if this is such a good fit. Or you could look someone up on social media, all kinds of social media. You could look them up on Twitter or Instagram, Snapchat, or I don't know. I don't even know all the social medias anymore. But you could look them up on all these different social media platforms, and you could learn everything that they did in 2012 and still not really know them, right? And I'm sure that if any of us were to be known, if we were to ask any of us, we would say that looking at everything on paper or on a screen or, you know, even hearing all these stories about us doesn't really mean that somebody knows us. Right? Because there's a whole other dimension to knowing somebody that paper and computer screens, social media, that even stories from other people, it just doesn't really make someone know us the way that we would like to be known. What's funny is, when it comes to a relationship with God, I find that this distinction starts to get a little bit fuzzy. This distinction that knowing about somebody doesn't necessarily mean that you know them, that starts to get a little bit blurry when it comes to a relationship with God. Sometimes we believe that the more that we know about God, the better that we know him personally. And to a certain extent, this is true. We're told to look at the Bible and get to know God. We're told to learn more about God, dive into it. And it's important for us to do that. Don't get me wrong. But there's also this whole other dimension to knowing God that we can't necessarily just get from knowing facts and figures and trivia and Greek and Hebrew words. What I find is that what can happen sometimes is we can spend years and years sitting through hundreds or even thousands of sermons. We can sit through years and years of Sunday school lessons. We can read books and books and books. We can even sit through the occasional Bible study. And it can be really, really easy for us to start to judge the maturity or the growth of our faith or of our relationship with God based on how much we know, based on how much trivia we can spout off at our Bible study or in a dinner conversation. We can judge the growth of our relationship with God based on how many words in the original language we know, right? It's really, really easy, and it almost becomes a marker of spiritualism, how much we know about God. And here's the thing, that's not really an issue if that's what God intends for our relationship with him to be, right? If that's what God intends for our relationship with him to be, then that's not really an issue because that's how he made for it to be. But when we look at the Bible, when we look at the way Jesus taught, and when we look at the way Jesus treated people, we don't really see that this is the case. Case in point, the Pharisees, Jesus treated these guys like they didn't know God at all, but they were the religious teachers of their day. And yet Jesus says to them, you look good on the outside. You're a whitewashed tomb. You look good on the outside, but inside you're dead spiritually. And these guys knew more about God than probably anybody else did. So what that says to us is maybe that means that that's not necessarily what God wants from us. Maybe what God wants in relationship with us isn't necessarily for us to know more and more and pile on facts and facts and facts into our relationship with him. Maybe it's a little bit different than that. But then that begs the question, what does God want from a relationship with us, right? If it's not about knowing more about God, if it's about knowing God, what does that mean? Like, what does it mean? What does a relationship with God where we know him looks like as opposed to knowing more about him? And that's where our psalm comes in today. We're still in our series today called Psalms in Summer. And our psalm today is Psalm 139. Psalm 139 is actually described as one of the most intimate of psalms by commentators. Intimate, don't get uncomfortable. This is a psalm that is written by David, who's a man after God's own heart. So if we're going to look at a relationship with God and what a modeled relationship with God looks like, David is probably a good person to look to for that kind of example. So we're going to look at this psalm today because this psalm paints the picture of a better way, paints the picture of a better way of knowing God, a better way of relationship with God. It paints the picture of a relationship in which we know and are known by God. And in this psalm, it's actually pretty clear that this is actually the kind of relationship with God that we were designed for. So without further ado, let's look at the psalm. I'm going to read it. Don't get sick of my voice. I'm going to do it really expressively. Psalm 139. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up, you discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain it. Where shall I go from your spirit, or where shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you're there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is as bright as the day, for darkness is as light with you. For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. If I would count them, they are more than the sand. I awake and I am still with you. Oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. O men of blood, depart from me. They speak against you with malicious intent. Your enemies take your name in vain. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with complete hatred. I count them my enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Now, the first thing that I want to say about this psalm is if we're looking for a 10-step guide on how to know God, this is not the place to look. This is not a 10-step guide or on knowing God 101. This is not a list of steps that you accomplish in order to know God. That's not how this works. And besides, when was the last time in our lives that our lives conform to a 10-step guide of how to live anyway, right? But this is not a 10-step guide of how to know God or what to do in order to know God. This is a song. This is a poem. This is a poem in which David wrestles with heavy theology, and he wrestles with real feelings, and he processes it all through his emotions, through his heart. It's real. That's what we've been saying about the Psalms all this summer. It's real. If we're looking for theology, meeting like the rubber hitting the road theologically, that is, the Psalms is where that happens. That's the beautiful thing about the Psalms. So David walks us through what he's processing in this psalm. David walks us through what he's thinking about, what he's trying to kind of emotionally and spiritually process. And the first thing that David reflects on is the presence and knowledge of God and just how all-encompassing it is. The first 12 verses are actually a hymn dedicated to the presence and the knowledge of God, just how all-encompassing, how comprehensive. That's over half the psalm is dedicated to the fact that God is everywhere and knows everything. Big theme here. From sitting to rising, from going out to lying down, from the heavens to the depths, from east to west, from the darkness of night to the light of day, God is always there and he knows everything that is happening, everything that is going on. Every single grain of sand that is on the beach, he knows how many there are. Every single star that's in the sky, he knows exactly how many there are. Every hair that's on our heads, he knows exactly how many there are. He knows everything. And even beyond our activity, even beyond what we do or what we don't do, God knows our thoughts and our ways. God knows every internal decision that we make. God knows everything that we're feeling. God knows everything that we're processing. God knows literally everything. Literally everything. And what's funny about this is when we talk about God knowing us, it's important for us to know the fact that God knows everything and is everywhere is an indicator that God actually pursues us. We talk about knowing God. God doesn't wait for us to make the first move. God doesn't wait for us to come to him and say, all right, God, I'm ready to know you. Like, I'm ready to be known by you. God doesn't wait for that. God initiates. God's presence everywhere is his initiation into knowing us. He's an active participant in the process of knowing us. He's not passive. He's not just kind of, you know, letting the chips fall where they may. No, he says, no, I want to know you, so I am here. I am wherever you are. I am going wherever you go. I am with you every single step of the way. God is an active participant in this process of knowing and being known. God is there. And what's interesting is David's response to this, right? David's response to this is there any place I can go to be away from your spirit? Where can I go? Is there anywhere I can go to be out of your sight? And a lot of us can relate to this initial response because it's a pretty typical human response. When we think about being known that intimately and that deeply, our initial response is it scares us. It scares us. The idea that God would know every single thought, every single action, every single decision that we make, maybe not even out loud, but inside, the fact that he knows every word that we say before we even speak it, that scares us. The initial response to this kind of spiritual and emotional, mental intimacy is no thank you. No thank you. Close but not too close. I want to be close but not too close. I want to be near, but not too near. I want relationship at an arm's length. I want to know you, but I don't want you to know me that well. No thank you. That is our initial, typical human response. And that's what David writes about here is, and the way I would describe this relationship when we have a relationship like that is kind of like the way I would describe my relationship with my Uncle Philip. It's polite, but it's not personal, right? It's polite, but it's not personal. Close, but not too close. And that's his initial reaction. Intrinsically, this kind of knowledge and presence, God, knowing that God is this present and knows this much, it makes us want to retreat. And that's David's initial response. But then David goes on to reflect on the fact that the presence of God isn't anything new. It's not anything new. In fact, from his birth, from the very moment of David's conception, God has been there. God's presence has been there literally every single step of the way, every second, every moment of his life, every big moment and every small moment, God has been there. God's presence has always been with David. God knew him in the womb, and God knows him now. God knew him when he was just a spark in his mother's eye or his father's eye, and he knows him now. God's presence is not new. God's presence has always been there. And it brings us to the verse that a lot of us as Christians, probably the most well-known verse of this psalm, I am fearfully and wonderfully made. It's the most well-known verse of the psalm, and for good reason, because it's very meaningful, it sounds really good, and truthfully, it's a little catchy, right? Good job, David. It's a little catchy. I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. But in the context of this entire psalm, we can see this whole other facet to being fearfully and wonderfully made. See, not only are we fearfully and wonderfully made physically, not only are we made in the image of God, we are fearfully and wonderfully made to be known by God. Not only are we made the way we are on purpose, we're made on purpose so that we can know God. And then David goes on to reflect on the thoughts of God, on how wonderful they are, how vast they are, how numerous they are, how incredible they are. And it's this incredible truth together. Those two ideas come together in this incredible truth that we are made not only to be known by God, but to know God. How incredible is that? It's part of our creation. It's part of who we are. It's part of our DNA. From the very beginning, we were made to know and be known by God. It's part of our function as human beings. And here's what I observe, okay? If we were made, if part of our function is to know and be known by God, if that's how we were made, if that's how we're made to function, then what happens when we're not functioning that way? What happens when we don't know and aren't known by God? What happens? Dysfunction. Dysfunction. Everything, corruption, greed, all that stuff, all of the dysfunction that we see in our relationships, in our workplaces, in our friendships, in our marriages, everywhere, all of that stems back to dysfunction in our relationship with God. Because if we're not functioning the way we were made to function at the very core of who we are, everything else gets out of whack. Everything else won't function the way it was made to function. So this fact, the fact that we were made to know and be known by God, it's actually fundamental to who we are as human beings. It's actually fundamental to our function and the way we function in our relationships, not just with God, but with others. And at this point, David's response to this knowledge changes. So David's been reflecting on all this, on the fact of God's presence and how we were made from our conception to know and be known by God. And David's response actually changes. He writes a prayer, and it sounds kind of out of place because, you know, oh, that you would slay the wicked doesn't have the same ring to it as I am fearfully and wonderfully made. We can admit that, right? It doesn't have the same ring to it. But he writes a prayer, assuring God of his loyalty to him despite opposition, despite challenges, despite all the things that might come up. David says, no, I will be loyal to you. I will be loyal to you no matter what comes up. And it's militaristic. It sounds kind of, you know, foreign to us because it's a different culture. And David was a king, but he was also, you know, involved in a lot of military campaigns. So, of course, for him, this is a practical way of swearing his loyalty, is even if there are enemies, even if there are people who oppose you, I stand with you. I stand with you, God. Whatever that means, God, I stand with you. And when we talk about enemies and those who hate God, I just felt the need to bring up again in Paul, in the letters of the Apostle Paul, when he says, our wars are not against flesh and blood, but against the spiritual powers that oppress and bring corruption. Those are the enemies. And so when we talk about David standing in loyalty, it's against the forces that oppose God, no matter what form they take, whether it's physical enemies or just stuff that goes against the principles of God. That's what David's talking about here. Basically, that he will be loyal no matter what the situations around him looks like. He will be loyal. And finally, David also responds by inviting God. He says, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Search me, know my heart, try me. See if there's any way in me that isn't of you. Lead me in the way everlasting. And we see this shift from whereas before, David wanted to run from the presence of God. David wanted to run from the knowledge of God. David wanted to hide. This time, David is saying, no, I welcome it. God, I welcome your presence. God, I welcome you to search me. I welcome you to know me. I welcome you to see if there's any way in me that isn't from you. God, I welcome it. So we see a difference from the first response to the second response. Whereas David before wanted to run away from God, this time David is welcoming and running towards God. So today, as we reflect on this, I just wanted to kind of ask ourselves this question. It's not very long today. I didn't want to take too much of your time, but what is your response to knowing and being known by God? What is your response? See, I think from this psalm, we can see two responses. We can run away and we can hide, or we can run towards God and welcome and invite him in. There are two responses that we can take, and it's easier to take the way of wanting to hide and wanting to run and wanting to push God away. And it's a lot more agonizing to allow God in and to welcome him in and to invite him in to know us. But David's response, even though he had that initial response of, no, God, I don't want to be near you. I want to hide. I want to, you know, run away. Even though he had this initial response, God still welcomes him. And David welcomes him back and says, yeah, God, I welcome you. I welcome you to search me. I welcome you to know me. I welcome you to be a part of my life and to know my heart. And so today, as we conclude, I just wanted to say, if you're here today and maybe you know a lot about God, but you don't necessarily know God, this isn't a reprimand. This isn't saying, hey, you do better. That's not what this is. It's not me saying, hey, you need to know God more. That's not what this is about. See, what this is about an invitation to a better way. This is what this whole psalm is about, is it's an invitation to knowing God and being known by God, because it is a better way. So as we reflect today, as we worship and close this out in a song, I would just invite you, if you are here and you say, yeah, God, I want to know you better, then acknowledge his presence. Acknowledge his presence. In every single place, in everything that you do, everywhere you go, acknowledge his presence. Cry out to him. The Bible encourages us to lift up all of our worries, cast all of our anxieties on God, because his yoke is easy and his burden is light. And part of being known by God means being known by him in the high times and in the low times. Acknowledge his presence in everything. And then model loyalty to God. Make sure your actions align with your words. If you say that you follow God, please follow God. No matter what it looks like around you, no matter what it looks like in your life, no matter what challenges come up, no matter what opposition comes up, follow God and stand with him. Stand for what he stands for. Love those that he asks you to love. Be with those that he asks you to be with. Care for those that he cares for. Care for the widow and the orphan. Stand for what God asks you to stand for. Don't stand against other people. Don't stand against, you know, the things like... Don't stand for things that aren't from God. Stand for things that are of God. Make sure your actions line up with your words. Model loyalty. And finally, I would just invite you, as we sing one more song, invite God to search you. Invite God in. Invite God and welcome him in. Say, know my heart, God. Know my heart. Know my thoughts. See if there's anything in me that isn't of you. That isn't of you. Lead me in the way everlasting. Show me what I need to do next. So if that's you today, I just want to pray for you. I want to pray that we would all just function the way that we were made to function. I want to pray that we would learn to live as people who are known and know God. I just want to pray for us today. Would you stand with me as we pray? God, I thank you so much. For the fact that we're made to know you, for the fact that we're made to be known by you, God, that's such an incredible fact, an incredible truth. And God, I know sometimes we brush that off. Sometimes we brush off your presence. Sometimes we brush off the fact that you're everywhere and in all places, in all things. God, sometimes we brush that off and we forget, God, just what an incredible truth that is, that you are with us every single step of the way, that you initiate the process of knowing us. But God, I pray today that as we leave from here, as we sing, as we worship you, God, may we not forget, and may we remember, Jesus, just how incredible it is to know you. Just how incredible it is to know and be known by you, Father. Lord, I pray that you would remind us of this fact and remind us of this truth as we go today. And Lord, I pray that if there's anyone in here that would say that they would like to be known by God and know God, not just know about God, but know God. God, I pray that you would lead them in the way everlasting. God, I pray that you would lead them, search them. God, I pray that they would invite you in, Jesus. I pray that they would seek after you and know you better, God. In your name, amen.